Hello and welcome to another episode of China on the Rocks, an F&B podcast where we talk about food, beverage, and everything in the middle. My name is Logan. I'm joined by my always awesome, always cool co-host.
Hi guys, Anna here.
If you notice, we got two microphones to work because one of us, Logan, was very stupid, didn't know how to hit one button on his computer.
But now that we figure it out, we're back, baby. We're back.
We're not sharing microphones anymore, so this is a big deal for us. So at any of your audiophiles at home or listening, we're like, wow, sounds normal. This is normal for us.
So yeah, Logan, also, let's not forget to have a shot, and we have something very special today.
So I wanted to do something really cool because we said this season, it's all going to be about new experiences. So we've got a friend, his name is Cedric Godzi. He's from Uganda. And a long time ago, he gifted me a bottle of something called Uganda Waragi. There'll be a photo of it in Instagram when Cheryl gets her act together. And this is a coconut-flavored rum.
I'm really excited. I actually never had any... I had South African spirits before, but that's about it. I never had any other African spirits, so I'm really interested.
Yeah, this is super cool. The percentage point is 37.5. And we're going to try some Ugandan coconut-flavored rum. Cheers, sure. Anna. If you ever remember Always Sunny in Philadelphia, when they go to New Jersey and they put alcohol in their suntan lotion containers, this is what it tastes like.
I disagree. I actually think that I was expecting it to be like Malibu, but it's a lot less sweet and a lot less overly coconut. So I would say it's like a better Malibu.
Also, it's spelled coconut flavored with a extra U in there, which you know it means for flavor.
Don't be hating on the British spelling.
So, guys, it's hot in Shanghai. Anna doesn't get to talk about plum rains today, okay?
It's over, guys. The plum rains is over.
Please, God, no more plum rains. But we've had quite a week here. We've had so much fun stuff going down. And we were talking about, what is this episode this week? Like, what do we talk about? No plum rains. I mean, that's a big, big, big thing. Microphones are working, so we've got our tech going. But then we started deciding, it's July, it's hot, it's all grimy outside, people are getting all sweaty, people are getting their bodies all moving with short shorts. So it's romance.
When Logan told me the romance being the theme, I was a little taken aback because we're both in committed relationships, so we just
can
walk
to the Jameson, guys.
We just watch what's out there, you know, but I guess we can have some long perspective from F&B dating.
No, so the whole thing is, and if you're a bartender or a chef, you feel me on this. We date a different way. Like, we don't have normal 9-to-5 jobs where you get done at 5 and work is done. If you're working in a job as a chef, if you're working as a bartender or a waiter, generally, you're dating in your restaurant. This has always been what happens in the U.S. In China, not so much, unless it's on a nightclub or something like that. But dating is very different because our hours are so different.
I would say we always date within the industry, not necessarily on the same place you work. I've done that before. Big mistake.
Yeah, you never, ever want to basically poop where you eat. That's the way I'm saying it politely. But, you know, like, people are listening to me and say, oh, Logan, I met my wife here. I did that. Completely fair. But if you work together, the problems you had at home, let's say somebody had a bad night and they were angry at each other for whatever reason, you take it to work with you. So it's very difficult, right?
Yeah, I think the hardest one is when you take from a problem from the relationship to work. I feel like for me, at least, problems at work, I know how to leave them at work and not bring home. But the other way around is harder.
You know, it's tough for friendships too. But like, Anna knows I love Every Time by Britney Spears. And I'm sorry, that's a banger. That's one of the best songs that's ever written. She's a god among women. She's the best. It's Britney Spears. But do I make her play that every time when I go to her bars? Yes.
Also, yes.
Also, yes. but she could, but we're friends, so we would like leave it at that. But I think sometimes when you're in a relationship, you know, there's something, a barb in there that just sticks a little deeper. And I will say, like, for bartenders and chefs and waiters, the dating in the scene is a lot different than just people that work at 9 to 5. And that's kind of what we wanted to explore today. So I'll expand. I have a very good friend of mine. We were talking the other day, and she started dating a chef. And she works a normal job, and she was like, oh, this guy's hours are crazy, then he wants to go home and just be quiet or play video games.
Don't we all?
Yeah, but for us, if you're always, always, always talking to somebody, or you're always in the spotlight, when your time is your free time, you don't feel comfortable with that. Like, you can't say, oh, listen, I did a mise en place for 40,000 people, and I did a charcuterie board, and I did all this crazy stuff. It's just like, no, I just want to kill some bad guys in Halo or whatever it is, right? And so, like, the mindset gets different. And I was asking Emma about this. She's a female bartender. I'm a male bartender. How has the dating scene been for you? Now, we're in committed relationships, but when you were single, like, without being vulgar or anything like that, like, what was your moves?
I think that one of the differentials maybe is that when you work in F&B, especially front of house, so like as a server or as a bartender, you do a lot of in real life dating, a lot less of like online or apps, because you are meeting people constantly. And you're always going to have that customer that comes in that you know they have a crush on you. And you can tell, because bartenders, we can tell. We can just tell. And then we kind of flirt, you get their contact, they come a couple times, and then eventually you're like, so, do you maybe want to get a drink on my day off or something along those lines? And you kind of go from there.
I mean, without being cheesy, T-Pain said it best. You know, when he said, what's your name? I'm T-Pain. Let me buy you a drink. Like,
yeah, the giving the drink is also a good tell, too.
It's a like, move,
buy
right?
Buy you a drink.
Let me buy you a drink. Oh, like, oh. But no, it's one of those things, like, my friend and she was like, Logan, were girls always offered to you on a platter? And I was like, no, I'm still working. I'm still being affable, and you have to be charming, and you have to be charismatic, and that's a thing you have to be if you're a good bartender.
The one thing that I find annoying, and I think is more often to people in F&B, they're women than for men, is that sometimes you are just being nice, and then guys take it the wrong way.
Yes, which is terrible. I don't think that's
yeah,
okay at all.
Because I think that when I was hitting on somebody, I was being very, okay, let me rephrase it. I think the reason why I'm so direct when it comes to like flirting is because I had to be to make people understand the difference. So I think when I was flirting, I was very straightforward. Like, I think you're cute. I want to go out with you. Like, I want to grab a drink. Or maybe we should go on a date or something along those lines, right? While when I'm just being nice, I'm just being nice. But a lot of guys still think that you owe them something. It can be quite weird.
I feel you. And I think those kind of people are not good people. Like, not you. I'm saying, like, the guys that feel like that, absolutely scumbags.
Well, I'm not saying that they feel entitled, but maybe they confuse, like, me doing my job with me being interested, right? It's not necessarily that they're crossing any lines, but they think, like, oh, this girl's smiling at me and being nice and, like, asking if I need another drink or she totally likes me. And you're like, no, I'm just doing my job.
See, this is what I love. Like, and I can only speak from my experience as a male bartender that's a straight male bartender. I loved working in San Francisco because we have this place called the Castro District. And Oscar's going to love this story anyway. But we have this place called the Castro District, and it's the gay district of San Francisco. And
awesome bars there.
I love my gay brothers and sisters and whoever people want to represent as. I love them. Love is love, is my opinion. But, I mean, I don't mind taking off my shirt and making an extra couple thousand RMB. And it wouldn't be 1,000 RMB at that point. It'd be USD. But, like, you go to these places, and you know what the people want, which is a different mentality than you're just working in a nightclub. Because you're just working there, you're like a nerd with a tie on and, you know, making drinks, like scoring out cosmos for people. And then all of a sudden, girls are hitting on you and you're like, oh, what do I do? These are like things like I feel in the normal dating world, you're not seeing, but in a F&B dating world, it's right away.
Yeah.
And then you have to be like, okay, cool. these girls are talking to me, this guy's talking to me, whatever it is, how do I maximize this?
Yeah, if I'm trying to set those like boundaries of like, I'm not interested, I'm just being nice, I always try to call them dudes or bro or homie, or like make it very obvious that this is just a nice friend thing, you know. Or yeah, but if you want to hit on somebody, it's fairly easy as a bartender, because you are in a place where you are, it's part of your job to be talking to people. So talking to people is not intimidating, because you might take romantic rejection, but you're not going to take a conversation. You're not going to come to somebody and they're like, sorry, what are you doing? No, get out. Like, you know, you get access to a conversation and you might get rejected, but it's much easier to approach somebody. You can always take a save. You can always pretend, no, I'm just saying, no, if you want another drink, that's it. Like, you know, people don't feel like you approaching them is somehow aggressive, right?
Like, I will say, I don't think I've ever gone on dates till I was like in my mid-20s, early 30s. Like, I've been a bartender since I was 21. So bartending San Francisco and then Shanghai, like, you don't go for dinner sometimes after your shift. You just go home, right? And there's McDonald's in the morning. So I've never went on dates, and I was so excited to finally go on first dates, because that's not something, you know, people are like, oh, what do you do? And I explain it. Obviously, I do something very fun and different, maybe, or something they've done when they were young and then they got real careers. So when I go on dates with people, they're like, oh, cool. And I could talk about fun stories. I mean, obviously, we have a podcast. It gives you a plethora, a cornucopia of interesting things to talk about. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, well, I'm still a human being. I'm still a normal person. And it's very interesting, like, to see other people's experiences with this kind of stuff.
I also think it's funny because before my partner, before all those things, I tried online dating too. I try like the, you know, the apps. And one funny thing that I hated, especially back in my mid-20s, now I'm a little bit more cautious about this, is that people would ask, what do you do? I'll say I'm a bartender. They ask, oh, cool, where do you work? And then you make the mistake of saying where you work and people show up. And it's different than meeting somebody that's already coming to your bar and you meet them there. Sure, that's cool. But when they kind of come after you meet on a dating app, it creates such an awkward situation because they don't realize that they're kind of trapping you because you are at your workspace. You don't get to leave. You don't get to, if you feel uncomfortable, not be there. You don't get to just end this, right? So you're there stuck at your work for another 8 hours. And if somebody shows up and they don't leave and they stay there, they're kind of forcing themselves into your space.
Well, yeah. We talked about this right before we recorded, was I don't know where half of my friends that are my lifelong friends at this point work.
Same. I know the ones that work at home and that's it.
Yeah. Like, we don't know where half of our Anna and I are very lucky. We have a good social circle of friends. I have no idea where they work. Like, they might say some name of something.
Yeah, I'll know the name, but I don't know where that's located. I don't know how to get there.
But they know exactly where we work, which, think about it, is kind of strange, right?
I don't mind, because friends are different, right? We do have a different, like, a friend's always welcome to come hang out. I think it's more like, yeah, if you really, and for anybody at home that's not a bartender and you start dating someone or a chef, unless they invite you, don't just show up to their work.
Well, I mean,
unless you're already like in a relationship and all that, then it's different. But, you know,
like, you guys know I'm at Talkalicious, right? I have people come up to me, and I always appreciate you that come up to me, guys. If you come, guys or ladies or people, come up to me, I'm very appreciative. If you like the podcast, we really love it and we appreciate it. But people do come up to me and I'm like, oh, okay, I've got still like, okay, how, you know where I work now. I don't know what to do because I can't leave.
Or people that come to you at your workplace and be like, oh, Anna, do you remember me? And I'm just here thinking, not really, but also I see a lot of people. I talk to a lot of people. And it doesn't mean I'm unapproachable. It just means that we don't have that type of relationship yet. And from there, we can, if I see you more often, if we talk more often, eventually it will be part of my circle that I will really know. But if we just chatted a couple times, I really don't know who you are.
I mean, I feel, and I'm pretty sure Anna will back this up, is also when you date somebody that works in F&B, our hours are not your hours. So for Anna and me, when people ask us, oh, did you get away for New Year's Eve? Did you have a party? What'd you do? It's like, no, I was at work. What'd you do for Christmas? I worked.
Well, people ask me now, a lot of our friends are teachers. They ask, what are your plans for the summer? And I'm like, work?
Yeah, work.
Just another season. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm going to be at work. You're asking me at my job.
Yeah. Yeah, I think at least as like when we're talking about bartenders or servers, you can still, not the first date, not when you just meet somebody, but you can still kind of hang out at your workplace. I find it more difficult probably for chefs.
Yeah.
Because they're in the kitchen, right? So they have the same, maybe a little earlier than us, but it's still a pretty crazy work hours, still evenings. But they don't get to invite someone that they're seeing to come hang out with them at the restaurant.
But chef's life is such a so respect to all our chef brothers and sisters and everyone out there. Chef's lives are completely nuts compared to ours. Because I'm in the front of the house, that means I've got to have, I have to know something about music, I have to know something about whatever sports game is going on, I have to be like dressed well, I have to be kind of charismatic and personality. Chefs are in the back just grunting and deep frying shit with oil spilling on their hands, with idiots that are making mistakes on like burritos or whatever it is. Like the chefs are just in the weeds all day. It's such a stress position for a chef, I think.
Yeah. Also, yeah, I feel like I never really dated a chef, but I've had a lot of chef friends and I hear their stories. And I think finding time to meet up with people becomes much more difficult.
Yeah, chef work doesn't stop. That's the thing. Like, they start early in the morning. They start doing mise en place. They start doing all their stuff. Like, there's that show right now on Hulu called The Bear.
Please watch it. Anyone at home watch it. That's
I can't
perfect.
Watch it. It's too stressful.
It's triggering. Yeah, I use it to show my known F&B friends because the first episode, I think, there's no spoilers on the story, guys. No worries. The first episode, it does a scene about basically the floor flow. So it's the ticket. It's the behind, around the corner, where's this, hot crossing. And it's basically just this communication. And it's very, very quick, anxious. And anybody in F&B can relate to being in the weeds and being in a busy day. And it's exactly that. And the show did a good job by replicating the exact anxiety that you have.
Yeah, no, that show stresses me out like crazy. And like Anna knows, and I know, and I'll say this name again, but Oscar's complimented me on it. I'm not a big touchy-feely person. I don't touch people that much. But when you're working, I am literally moving you out of the way to get to my station. And I'm saying behind, touching, hot, knife. Knife is a big one.
Sharp. I do sharp, yeah. But yeah, same thing.
Yeah, but like, you know, we always joke when I worked in nightclubs, we'd yell, hot tacos, hot tacos, hot tacos. If it was a pregnant lady. Like, you have certain words and you're moving people physically, and it's always an interesting thing.
Yeah, you realize you go to a busy like train or something or the metro and you end up like doing little taps on people's lower back and saying behind accidentally when you try to say excuse me.
But I mean, without giving out too much detail, you're dating a normie.
I'm dating a normie, yeah.
So how is that transition for him like?
I think that the schedule is a little bit okay because he is also a little bit of an insomniac that stays up late. So schedule-wise, it's just hard to have a normal home routine with the schedule. But it's not the type of reverse schedule that we don't see each other. It's okay. But I think that the part for, I guess, a lot of what we're calling normies here is that they don't realize how social our lives are. So I think that everywhere we go, people know us. Everything we do, it's surrounded by people. We're talking to people constantly. There's things happening all around us all the time. In the beginning, it's really fun. But I think after a while, also, it's just a different world than people are used to. Like,
oh, no, I 100% agree with you. Like, when I was working, when I first moved here, I was working at a place called The Strip, which wasn't that busy. We'll have a picture of me at The Strip. Then I worked at a place called Mint, and that was like going from minor league baseball to the Yankees. And we used to walk into nightclubs. People would just give us the best table. And this is 4 a.m. Everybody's in like a nice suit, but we're 4 a.m. walking in a place, and like it was. I'm not going to say I was Derek Jeter, but like that kind of like there was that level of you were at that spot, right? And it's hard to explain that to somebody when you get home. And you know, like, how was your night? It was like, I can't explain it to you because it was off the hook. Like, there's no story I could tell you that you ever had working in a bank.
Also, I think that because we have such a high social output during like our work week, we're also the most boring people for our days off. I feel like when I have time off, I just want to sit on the couch and play video games. Yeah, I just want to relax. I don't want to deal with people. I don't want to go out. I just want to like be. And I think that can be for a lot of people, like they work normal jobs. When it comes to their weekends, they or their days off, whatever they may be, they are like, okay, finally I'm free from boring work. I want to go out. I want to go to a party. I want to go hang out with people. And I'm like, I want to play video games and lay on the couch all day.
No, like for me, when I go to a hotel, I wake up like at 6 in the morning to go to breakfast. Because hotel breakfast, respect, I love.
Respect, agreed.
And then I go to the gym for an hour or two. Then I sleep. And then you know what I do? Nothing. It's the best.
I soak in the bathtub and just watch TV. Yeah. Like nothing. Like, yeah.
And then you know what time I go to sleep? 7 or 8 p.m.
It's funny too, because I think it's also an amount of how many years you've been doing this for as well. Because I think one of the things that I think we both experience, right? You go to a guest shift in another city or another country. They put you in a really nice like 5-star hotel for maybe 2 or 3 nights. And when you arrive, they suddenly think that they have to entertain you. And for you to be happy, they need to make your schedule very packed with going to bars, going to parties, going to restaurants. And I'm just like, can I just spend all my free time that I'm not doing the shift, that I'm not prepping for the shift, that I'm not working, just at the hotel? And they get kind of worried. They're like, oh, but what are you going to do to entertain yourself? And I'm just like, nothing, literally nothing. And they're like, oh, but we can take you out to like bar hop. We can see all these bars. I'm like, no, I want to be in the hotel.
I've been doing this thing right now where I've been just reading like Norwegian sagas. I don't speak Norwegian. I know nothing about Norway except for my rando scandal friends. But it gets my mind so far away from just being out and about at night. And it like really relaxes me. And it's a very good saga story. But like, you know what I mean? Like it's one of those things where if I'm guest shifting at a hotel, guest bartending at a hotel, which I'm going to be doing at the Edition Hotel coming up next month, I'll be in that hotel room maximizing my mini bar, the TV, and probably the spa.
And the bathtub. You got to take a soak in a hotel. You must. If there's a bathtub in that room and you check out without using it, you're doing hotels wrong.
Oh, you're a bathtubber?
Oh, I'm a bathtubber. I'm a soaker.
I don't like being in a bathtub.
I'll stay until it's uncomfortable.
See, like, even my parents, I grew up, we had a hot tub. And in New Mexico, it snows, so you have, like, 3 or 4 feet of snow.
Ideal hot tub with the snow. That's a dream right there.
No, it's just not my thing. Even when we had house parties and all the girls would be in the hot tub, not my thing.
I don't want to potty in a hot tub. I just want to soak there.
Yeah. If you're playing word bingo at home, Anna said potty again. So that's a plus point for Logan.
All right. Thanks, Logan.
We've been starting that as a new side hustle game on X.
Okay. I will not say party anymore. Well, I say now. Well, gathering. It's a celebration.
It's a Magic the Gathering of hot tubs. No, but I mean, but it's such a different thing. Like, when I hang out with all my bartending friends, we could be out till like 8 or 9 in the morning, completely nothing illegal or anything. Just we're going to get dinner. We're going to go out, have drinks at a club. We're going to go back to somebody's house, watch some dumb movie, and just have a really fun time together. Because our working time doesn't mean we're asleep. Work finishes at 4 a.m. You're not falling asleep at 4 a.m.
Yeah, I think that's something that I think that's the hardest thing for people to understand. When they look at your schedule, they think, let's not get to nightclubs because that gets a little more messed
up on
the
schedule.
But let's get you finished work at 2 or 3 a.m., right? A lot of people think, okay, so if you go to bed at 3:30, you can wake up a certain time and you can still have a day. But the problem is, it's kind of like any other job. When you finish work, you kind of want to decompress, you want to eat, you want to do something. You're not just going to finish work, especially in a loud environment full of people, and then just go to bed.
Yeah, you have too much energy on you, and it's like you can't shake off the energy right away. You have to say, okay, what are we doing next? Like, where are we going? Like, we used to always go to Bifeng Tong, Hai Di Lao, any of these places that were open late. And even if you go there now, it's all Xiaojie. So Xiaojie is girls that have been working nightclubs that are like models. You go to all these places and people are out and about because they're decompressing. And like, for you, it's a best night out. It's your Saturday. This is the craziest night. For us, it's just a night.
Yeah, I found ways to do it at home to try to make my decompressing time as short as possible before I go to bed. But I still need an hour.
No, that's fair. I mean, like, I need to start reading. Like, I probably read a book every 3 days. I finish a book. So I'm a voracious reader because it's quiet. And then I just have some free time. I'm like, okay, I could just read. I'll fall asleep on my own terms. And then that's it. Otherwise, you're tossing and turning. You're like, oh, that DJ played this song. Yada, 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 yada. It's a very interesting thing. That's why I think it's tough for dating with F&B.
I have prepared some Reddit stories. But I feel like they are right on par with everything that we already discussed. So I'll read one and let's see if there's any new points coming from it.
Let's do it. These are the Reddit stories I've been reading.
All right. So this one is coming from the subreddit Dating Over 30.
Uh-oh.
And the title is, Your Thoughts on Dating a Bartender at This Age. So I read the post. I just entered my 30s, female, and I have been a bartender for around 8 years. Is this a turnoff to most men? I know some people might be turned off because bartenders in general get hit on frequently and meet new people every day. But our hours suck, and it's been very hard for me to date guys because they want to hang out with me on the weekend nights, which are my biggest money-making nights. I also wonder if you guys think bartending is a dead-end job. I personally do well for myself, and I have a couple other side hustles bringing income. But those aren't the things I tell my dates about. One of my close bartender friends used to always say there's only two types of people that date bartenders, cops and other bartenders, because of all of our wacky hours. What are your thoughts?
Dating a cop would be cool.
To be honest, I didn't even think of cop, but there's two posts here of people saying that because they are bartenders, they date cops.
Wow, I didn't even think about that.
I didn't think of that either. Because of the hours, I guess, but yeah.
Oh, man. She would be so cool. I would be the... No, you know what? I would... If you guys know me in person, I would be the worst person if I had a cop for a girlfriend. I would just walk into places and talk so much shit. And be like, no, wait. My missus is going to come over. And then she would just come through and beat the shit out of people.
I don't know how I feel about dating a cop. I never thought of this. This post,
either. Yeah. No, this is amazing.
Because the thing is, okay, sure, you can date a cop. How do you meet a cop?
Well, apparently at the right kind of bars.
No, but if they have the similar schedule as you, they are not drinking at your bar. Where do you meet them?
Well, they could be off shift because I think it's like a hotel. They work 3 shifts. Did you ever work in a hotel?
Yeah, I did.
So you know, like there's the AM shift and the lunch, like whatever the 7 to 7.
Their shifts always like rotating, like every month or something.
It's
different shifts.
It's got to be something like that, right?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Hey, cops out there listening, let us know.
Because I was such a jerk. I was a concierge in a hotel for a long time. And I would just walk to the front of the lines in San Francisco with my business card and be like, I'm the concierge. Just walk right in.
Well,
I got a helicopter ride like that once.
Every time I worked in hotels, I worked in F&B department. So the hours were the same as all their F&Bs. Like I never worked in any.
Oh, no, that's how I got an F&B because I was working concierge. I was trying to get my cleft d'or. That's the keys that they have. And just it ended up being better to be in a bar. It struck me better because nobody wants to be at work from 7 a.m. till, what is it, 7 a.m. till 11?
Yeah.
11 till 6 or 7, and then 7 to the 12, and then there's overnight.
Yeah. I work shift work when I worked at a bar and a casino because those are 24 hours.
This is the booby story, right?
Yes. So I worked with shift a lot.
You've got to get some heat on these comments. That's why.
No, I worked in this casino on shift too, but they changed the shifts. We worked 6 days a week. We only had one day off. And they used to change the shifts, I think it was weekly or biweekly. And I don't know why I got stuck with doing the overnight. And then after the overnight, whoever was organizing the shift was incompetent. And instead of putting me in the evening one or something like that so you can slowly transition, they put me on the morning one right after.
Ooh.
I only had one day to basically recover. But because I finished overnight and then I had to start in the morning, my day off became even less than 24 hours.
Oh, no, that's tough. Yeah, uh-huh. That's way too tough.
And I remember that after a month, when this crazy shift, I was so irritable. I was so angry. Oh. I was so miserable at everyone.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah, that's not, because that's for your mental health, for just your actual health. That's way too tough.
Yeah, I was very on edge. But I remember being on shift all the time and I just never got the good shifts. I don't know why nobody ever put me in the afternoon shift. The one I wanted.
But yeah, no, I don't know about dating a cop. Just going back to that. I think it'd be kind of fun. I mean, I think here at this podcast, we respect everybody. So there's no issue like dating. Oh, man, dating a Chinese cop would be kind of fun.
It'd be kind of cool. Well, but the other question that she has is, do you think it's a red flag to be a bartender in your 30s?
I'm a bartender in my 40s. Well, actually, no, that's not true. I'm a bar and restaurant owner in my 40s.
I don't think it's a red flag. I think it's more that as someone that, like you, has been doing it since I became of age, basically, I don't think I would want to continue the exact same job. We're in a place in our careers where we are owning business, starting businesses, doing more operations or consultancies, things more related to that side, which is more of we have more flexibility with our schedule. I don't know if I wanted to continue throughout my 30s working nights 5-6 days a week.
No, I find myself when I'm doing these events, like when we do events, I feel older. I do feel like it's something a younger person should be doing, but never forget being a bartender, being a waiter, being a chef, being a line cook. These are trades. These are trade works. These are very working with your hands. These are blue collar jobs. Not a joke about it. And there's nothing to be ashamed about doing that.
Oh, completely agree.
So the person that thinks that's a red flag, that's on them. Like if you truly love what you do and you work hard at it, you could be a guy that builds, you're a bricklayer at 80 years old. Okay, respect, man.
Yeah, no, I don't think I'm coming from a place of judgment. I'm just coming from a place of
cancel Anna.
I can't
cancel Anna 2022.
No, I just can't. I just can't do it for the sake of just the hours. For it's, they're stressful on the body, they're stressful on the mind, right? Like just that type of
it's stressful on the soul. No, 100%.
Yeah. So more on the idea that I would, again, if she's happy, she's happy. Keep doing you, do you, girl. But I have a feeling that I kind of want to transition more towards a better schedule, but it's just me.
Yeah, but that's fair. Okay. What's the next one you got?
Now, I just realized the cop thing. I think the next one also talks about dating cops.
Anna, did you want to date a cop? Is this something we should talk about?
Okay, here. So this is from r/bartenders. The title is just dating as a bartender. And there's a lot of exclamation points, so I'll let you guys know. It's so freaking hard for exclamation points. I'm on dating apps, and all these guys want to meet at the times that I work. No, I cannot do Friday or Saturday nights. Again, lots of exclamation points.
But hey, that's normal. If you don't work in F&B, you don't understand. Fridays and Saturday nights, that's when I work. Because you idiots need to eat on Fridays and Saturday nights.
And then, most of my boyfriends have been other bartenders or cops or whatever other jobs that have weird hours. Am I just stuck with dating first responders or other bar industry guys? I can't see myself dating a 9-to-5-er. I don't even think we would ever see each other.
I think this is a very American-centric question. Because I've never I've never heard that before. That just, I mean, yeah, that's such a thing. I've never even, yeah.
Yeah. That's what I said. I didn't think we were going to cover so many of the spaces before. So I feel like this is just a repetition of the same story.
Yeah.
And
respect. Yeah. I think that's just something I personally never saw. Like, for me, it was always more strippers.
Oh, I can see that.
Same hours.
Yeah.
Both handsome.
I can see that, but...
Svelte. No, but like, seriously, like, strippers have the same hours as a bartender. And then you go to the strip club with the stripper and it's super fun.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I don't share the experience, but I can see it.
But that's, yeah, but like, dating cops, EMTs, I know a bunch of EMTs and cops in the States and they're awesome people. And I've never, yeah, their girlfriends are always, yeah, because they're not working traditional hourly jobs as well.
It was interesting too. Both of these posts came from perspective of women.
Yeah, no, it's honestly, it's a really cool, guys, tell us in the comments what you think about it, because it's a very good question. I could tell you, I don't know, because like I said, I didn't see that coming. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Cool. So Anna, what you been drinking?
Ooh, the drinks I've been drinking. I've actually tried something really cool last week. I was doing a menu tasting for a project that I am starting a little collaboration with. And their bar manager came up with it was so simple, but so nice. So he made a hibiscus and shiso, like, you know, shiso leaves that could go with sushi and all that. Shiso and hibiscus syrup with lemon, gin, and elderflower soda. And it's just so good. It was so fresh. It was very herbal, very green, very refreshing, and super crushable. And I just really loved it. And I was thinking about it, how shiso is such a underused ingredient.
Well, that actually sounds refreshing and delicious. I love hibiscus in a cocktail. I feel like it's so underused. Like, if you do, like, a hibiscus cosmopolitan or something like that, like, it brings a different aspect to a table, but, like, you still understand what it is in terms of flavor profiles.
What have you been drinking, Logan?
I called it the Hulk Hogan. I was going to call it the Hulk Logan, but I was like, it's too much.
Too much branding?
Yeah, too much branding. So... back in the day in San Francisco, we had these drinks called Incredible Hulks. Have you ever heard of an Incredible Hulk?
I have not. Please enlighten me.
It's Hypnotic and Courvoisier.
Okay, classy.
I hung out at a lot of... if you know, you know what these places that I hung out at. But, so I wanted to make a drink. I was like, thinking about a little bit interesting stuff. So I took bourbon, which I love. Fresh carrot juice, maple syrup, bitters, and I'm looking at my recipe right now. Bitters and cinnamon.
Oh, that sounds good.
That's really good. So we're going to have an event coming up here on the 7th that Anna and I are going to be bartending at.
An industry night.
At the Pearl.
Pearl, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, the amazing Pearl. You can say it together. 3, 2, 1. We're the worst Virgos ever. I swear, we are the worst. We're born 2 days apart. We are the worst Virgos.
We just couldn't think up. I was just like, what are we saying? Are we saying the amazing Pearl or just a Pearl? Or what?
I'm just saying the name of the establishment. Let's try it again. 1, 2, 3.
The Pearl. Pearl.
So that's how used car dealerships get you, too. They keep saying the same name. So we're going to be making this drink. And then I have a guest bartending shift at a place called Juanitos.
Nice.
And we make this drink. Guys, I've said this before. I will say it again. It's like an angel dancing across your lips. We're using our ex-bourbon barrel high seas whiskey. And you will fall in love with both carrot juice and cinnamon. And I was blown away at it worked. Like, we had a dish that we were doing with some carrot puree. And I was like, how do I make something with this? And sometimes you take a swing and it's a miss. But you strike out at all the things you don't hit at. It sounds like something somebody would say. But yeah, I had that. Now, Anna, do you have any F&B horror stories?
None that I can share right now.
Because I might have an F&B horror story.
Go ahead. I'm listening.
Okay, so
I feel like Frasier. I'm like, Seattle? I'm listening.
Put your big Frasier headphones on. Okay, so it was my first week of bartending at this place called Swig in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Like, this is a high-end nightclub. This was our Mint or our Muse or whatever big names you could think of. And the bar manager's dad asked me to make him a Manhattan. And I had never made a Manhattan before, and this is before we had cell phone technology where you could just look stuff up.
So you had to just know.
You just had to know what stuff was.
Oh, we had those little books that we used to write all the recipes behind the bar.
You had a little notepad in your back pocket.
And for some reason, it's never alphabetical order, so we take ages to find. We're just like, through these pages.
And you're under stress because you don't know what nothing is, right? And I've talked about my Manhattan recipe before on this, and Anna said it was wrong, but... So I made this Manhattan sweet vermouth, whiskey, bitters, and a cherry, right or wrong?
Well, rye whiskey.
Yeah, rye whiskey, yeah.
Sweet vermouth. The cherry or orange twist is on.
Orange twist, yeah.
It's your flair, right? I prefer orange twist, basal, but yeah.
I did not do any of those because I had never made a Manhattan before. I had the basic glass right, so I had a Manhattan. So there's two types of martini glasses. There's the one you see that's a triangle. We call that a martini glass, right?
Yeah.
There's the second glass, which we've talked about a long time ago back on this podcast. That's the rounded one. You kind of see Leo DiCaprio drink champagne from it at Great Gatsby.
It's a coupe or a coupette.
Yeah. And so the story about that is it's supposed to be based on Marie Antoinette's breast.
Supposedly.
It's supposed to be.
Yeah, we don't know if it's true, but it's a good story.
Yeah.
If it is.
So you're drinking booby milk. So, I made a all-sweet vermouth Manhattan, because I didn't know that was... I thought the bourbon was just a little bit. So, I basically did a 90-10, and the guy's dad apparently was pissed at me. This is day two of me working at a bar.
Oh, he didn't even pretend he liked it to be nice?
No. I got the drink thrown in my face. I was getting yelled at, and I was like, this is my first day, or second day. So it was an absolute horror story. Like, my boys at the bar, like, when you work in a bar, everybody's your friend after a little bit. And a customer yelling at you, doesn't matter who the customer is the enemy.
Correct.
So everybody, backed me up. And so this poor gentleman, who'd probably been drinking Manhattans his whole life, now, to this day, hopefully he's still alive, thinks a Manhattan is 90% sweet vermouth and 10% rye whiskey.
I don't have a comment for that.
No, everybody was like, you can't yell at him, yada, yada, yada. I'm covered in booze and just dripping. Like, I was completely guessing, but I was wrong.
You were wrong. You know what I think it's funny, too? Sorry, it's not really a horror story. It's just a hot take. It's a hot take. When I worked in hotels, we had a lot of business travelers or tourists coming to China from the U.S. or other countries. And I've noticed that there was a lot of people that came in with these little cards that say their drink.
Oh, fuck those people.
No, but the funny thing about, I hate those two, because instead of ordering directly from you, they give you a card that says Samantha drinks a blah, blah, blah. And it has a recipe on it. But the funny thing is that every time they give you a card, it's a very wrong, horrible version of a drink. It's always a horrible recipe.
Guys that are listening at home, how many times have you ever heard me curse on this podcast? I hardly ever curse. And if you know me in real life, I don't curse that much. But yeah, no, those people, F them.
Yeah, so it just reminds me because somebody had a really weird recipe for a really weird martini once. And they were very, very insisting that it has to be done that way. That's the only correct way. And then once they got their drink, they go around the bar telling a bunch of people sitting at the bar that that's the correct way. That's the right martini. And it was just not...
A trash martini.
Yeah, I thought it was funny too. I had a...
I've seen this on Reddit. I know exactly what you're talking
about. Yeah, and everybody has a lot of I had one that was only Ketel One vodka or Absolut or something, or Belvedere with ice, exactly 3 limes, cranberry juice, cherry liqueur, pineapple juice. And they're all super sweet mixes of a lot of things that don't really mix. But I had a funny one where a guy came over and he wanted a shaken vodka martini on the rocks with an olive. So he wants vodka on the rocks with an olive. So I just did that. And he didn't see me do it. So he accepted. It was great. But he had a whole instruction on how long to shake for, how to shake it, how many ice cubes to shake with.
I hate those people.
And it's just vodka. I also had a customer once ask me for a classic daiquiri with no sugar. So I told her it's going to be very sour because it's just going to be rum and lime. It's like, oh, no, no, it's not, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So I gave him shaken rum and lime. And then she complained that it was too sour. It was undrinkable. That's not a daiquiri.
These are the people that, like, they want the skinny margarita. It's like, okay, so you want tequila and lime juice? Because we put agave and Cointreau in ours. So what do you want inside of your...
I have a mystery of the skinny margarita, right? But I think when people talk about the skinny margarita, what they mean is no sour mix and no added sugar. So just lime, triple sec, and tequila.
Yeah.
But I don't think people understand that liqueurs in general have just as much sugar as syrups do. So at the end of the day, it still has sugar on it. And like, if you want a low-calorie drink, have a vodka soda.
Yeah, skinny bitch should be a vodka soda or a vodka Diet Coke.
Right on.
I mean, it gets under my skin. When people do that, oh...
I'll try to find a little card for us to put on Instagram as well. There's a bunch of them on Reddit. People hate those. And if you're that person, don't do it. Just don't do it. Just order something from the menu.
Like what I always do, like I order, but I also try to be nice to people. I order I generally order vodka sodas at bars. But if I don't have a special drink you need to make for me. I feel like that's, you're taking the piss at that point. But guys, I mean, by the sound of the blender, which apparently nobody could hear last time because of AI, but by the sound of the blender...
Or maybe Logan is just hearing noises that no one else
has. tinnitus is going on. No, but by the sound of the blender, guys, we got to cut this one short. Thank you so much for listening to China on the Rocks. Hopefully you follow us on our Instagram. It's Core, China OT Rocks. Ask us any questions on Spotify. You could actually leave comments. If you notice, sometimes I leave comments. You can message me directly. If you need to email us, it's chinaontherocks@gmail.com. And guys, thank you so much. We'll see you in the next one.
Bye.
Ciao.